everyone, welcome to a new episode of Karen and Toss. This is the podcast / YouTube channel where I, your host, Karen Hines, film critic and journalist, speak to film creatives around the world about their work, the industry, and what inspires them. And today I'm joined by writer and director Carolee Renard to talk about her short film Unbraided, which had its recent world premiere at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival. And I'm very excited because it talks about something that was once intimate to me. Here, I have to... I don't have here to bring it anymore, but it was a struggle for me at one point. So we'll definitely talk about that. But first of all, I'll say a bit about the film. So Unbraided is basically, it takes place, I guess, over the span of one day where these two friends, Frankie and Joe, are on a quest to find a braider to do Frankie's hair at the last minute because her original braider canceled on her, which is also something I've experienced. And it's a fun adventure, but it also has very deep context to it because it's about the need for Frankie to feel perfect to please her mother and her grandmother and her family. And though the film is short, it's a short film, it has a lot of things in it that we as Black women experience and that we're familiar with. So again, I'm very proud of Carolee for debuting this film and for having such a successful screening at the Santa Barbara Film Festival. And I believe it's screening at another film festival soon, right? I think I saw
Next week, American Cinema Tech, they're doing, for Women History Month, they're doing, showing a bunch of films from women filmmakers. And next week, they have a slot for women with short films and our debut short films. And so next, yeah, at American Cinema Tech, Los Feliz Theater, 7 o'clock, if anybody's in LA and want to come see it.
Yes, roll on up. So my first question for you, one of the things I usually like to ask my guests is, what got you inspired to be a filmmaker and a writer? You know, there's other things that you could be within the film industry. You could be an editor, you could be a cinematographer, you know, you could be a producer. Like, what made you decide I want to actually be a writer and a director?
Well, I've always known that I wanted to be in the film industry. It actually first started off as acting. I started acting when I was super young. Mm-hmm. And I did all of that like throughout high school and college. And at some point, like, I went to performing arts high school, all that drives. I thought I was gonna be a Broadway actress. That's all I wanted to be, was a Broadway actress. And halfway through high school, I really started writing because there was just a point as an actress where I just felt like, especially as a Black actress, I felt like if I wanted parts that were meaningful, I would probably have to write it. And it was also like the rise of like seeing a bunch of other women in the industry be multi-hyphenate. And so selfishly, I started writing because I wanted to just write parts for myself. Because if I wanted to get like the meaty, you know, complicated roles that like my white classmates were getting, I would have to write them. And so I started writing and I was still acting, and I did what everyone, eventually does, move out to LA and got jobs and to sustain myself. And at one point, I was background acting, doing all that stuff. And I just kind of got tired of the acting part of it, mainly because it was once again, like, I was, getting stereotypical roles, auditions, and like the best friend roles, or the, and I was just like, this is very exhausting. I really don't, I don't love it as much anymore, right? Like, because like my first love was acting, and I just kind of got a little disillusioned with the way that Black actresses have to basically beg for crumbs. And I just was over, and auditioning is the worst. I hate auditioning. And so I just kind of focused more on writing, and that just became like my main love. And eventually I got staffed and I got into a writer's room, and I did the traditional path. And there was a moment in between season 2 and season 3 of the writer's room that I was staffed in where I, very type A Caribbean mindset, I was just like, oh, I want to, like, because we didn't get to go on set. It was like in the middle of the pandemic, and also budgets cuts and because most of the time writers get to go on set, you know, and produce your own episode, and you kind of like talk to the directors and have a say, and like, you know, you put your fingerprints on the script that you just wrote. And I wasn't getting that opportunity. It was just a lot of, you know, external factors of like me not being able to go to set. We shot in New Orleans, and the person that I am, I was just like, oh, I don't like this. I don't like not being, having a say. I don't like have, I didn't like not being able to put input into things. And like, you know, like I wrote the script, I know the characters, I know what this scene is, I know what I had envisioned when I wrote it. And so there was like a spark in me that was kind of lit, where I was kind of like frustrated that I was being left out of the process, and I was being like, you know, kind of like nobody really cared about my opinion. And I was like, oh, I don't like that. I don't like not being involved. Like, I have a say, I have opinions. And so my showrunner at the time, I was really talking to him about it. And I was like, you know, I think I want to direct. I think I want to do this. And he also directs. And he was like, yeah, I think you're a director. I've always thought you were a director. It took you long enough to get here. Because he's like, you're very opinionated. You have a very specific vision. You have a very specific voice. And so from there, directing kind of came into my life. And so, yeah, that's where we are. I figured, you know, I was a writer and a director, and I really just, I'm not somebody who like writes a script and just hands it over and just pray and wish that people can understand what I'm saying. And so that's a long way to say that's how I got to writing and directing. It's mainly a control issue. I don't like giving control over to people. I'm too type A for that.
But it makes sense, you know, because as a writer, you're controlling the narrative, but you don't get to see where it goes when it's being developed, you know. Mm-hmm. But as a director, you get to control both the story and the way the story develops and see how it changes. Because one of the things that you talk about a lot on Twitter, which is where we met, is how a lot of changes happen between script writing process and the final product off screen, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's something that a lot of people don't understand with the film industry, is a lot happens between paper to camera. You know, you get the end. Yeah. As a director, you get way more control over how the final product looks. Of course, to some extent, the studios and the producers have a say in that, but as a director, you get more advocacy for the characters and for the story, you know, for what it's supposed to look like. So that makes sense, you know, especially as you say, like not only as a type A character, but also as a Black woman, because there's not many in Hollywood in specific spaces and in specific jobs. So it's that you're just like one more Black woman to say, yeah, no, like.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like what you said, I'm probably butchering the quote, and I've heard it somewhere. It's like one of the first things I heard, there was like, there's three movies. There's the movie you write, there's the movie you make, and there's the movie that's edited. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, movies go through so many changes, you know. It's like you write a script, and then it's actually the movie you make, because on production, there's so many things that happen, like weather and budgets and time, that like something you write, it's like it's not physically possible to do, right? So then you have to like on the fly make changes, and there's rewrites on scripts. There's so many things that happen during production that changes, or you have to adjust. And even on my little short film, like there's so many things, like, you know, the way I envision certain things. And then when we got to day of set or during production, we're like, oh yeah, that's not doable, or we have to move, or I only get one opportunity to film this because of time constraints. And then when we got to editing, I cut a lot of things for my movie because it was like running too long, or narratively it just didn't work anymore, it just didn't flow anymore, timing, pacing. So yeah, so there's a lot of things that change in those three moments of filmmaking. And so for me as a Black woman, like you said, there's not so many of us in these spaces. For me as a Black woman, I need to make sure that I'm not cut out of those moments, and I have to be involved. So it's just like, yeah, I write the script, but I also need to be on set, because what happens when, you know, budget, time, whatever, actor sick, or you have to rewrite, or you have to do something, that just gives me too much anxiety to sit around being like, I don't know what's going on. And then the same way with the editing, like, you know, I have a Black woman editor, and it's like she sends me her first cut, and then her and I sit down and we talk, and you know, even in my on my shirt we had producer's note, and we had like all these notes and stuff like that, and it was just like fighting for things and being like, oh, that makes sense. And then, you know, killing scenes where I was like, oh, I really loved that scene when I wrote it, and I really loved that scene when we filmed it, but it narratively just doesn't work in the short film right now at the end product. So I would have been devastated as a writer to be like, oh man, like they cut the scene out or this scene, you know, and like not understand it. So I have to, as like, I think I was always a director. I was always a director. I just didn't know it, but I have to be involved in all process and all steps.
Right. Yeah. Cause as a director, even when you do make cuts to scenes that you love, it makes sense to you.
Yeah.
You know, it makes sense. Whereas as a screenwriter, just a writer, a scene that you think is super important to the narrative and everything that you want the audience to receive gets cut, and you'll be like, why? And the director doesn't necessarily have to explain it to you depending on the setup of the system that you're in. And it may make sense to them from a particular point, but because they're not, because it's not being explained to you, that would always bug you. It would bug me. You know, I would be like, but why? But you can't really get an answer. So I get it completely. And in talking about control, I think Unbraided is kind of talking about that as an odd segue to the film, but I think it does make sense that your first film produced like this is about control. You know, it's about the lead character Frankie, played by Aaliyah Quiñones, wanting to control how people see her. But it's also about struggling with how her family, her mom and her grandmother, want to control the way she looks, you know?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
People may be like, well, how did you jump from that to that? But I'm like, if you're a Black woman and you have to
deal with it,
but this person, it makes sense.
Yes.
And it makes sense because our hero, like, I always say this, my mom always used to tell me and my sister, our heroes are crowned in glory. And that we had to be very well put together when we left home, you know, whether we're going to the corner store, even if your ankles in cream, what are you going to say when your ankles are looking so ashy? You know, even now, I'm the same way. When I go through the door, I make sure, is my ankles cream? And like, is my hair, even if my hair is like sure enough, I still like, I oil it because I don't want to go sit with my dad with like my scalp looking dry. And as with longer hair, like going to primary school, we had the big hair plaits with like bubbles and all that. We had to make sure every morning our hair looked a specific way. And growing up into an adult, go to work. You can't go to work with your hair not looking cat, you know, with your clothes pressed, your outfit tidy, everything, your bag have everything you need. And Unbraided is about that because Frankie, her hair is not controlled, you know, it's uncontrollable because she's temporarily lost control, I think, of her emotions in that day because she's freaking out about impressing this boyfriend, Greg, that she clearly does not like, but she has to make him regret breaking up with her, you know, he has to regret it. So she has to turn up looking fly, you know, she has to impress her mom and her grandparents to say, I am worthy of being your daughter, being your granddaughter, to all these people at this wedding. And like, it's about control. It's about controlling how we want people to see it. So tell me about making Unbraided your first project about that, and about just like making this story Unbraided, uncontrollable here, into a controlled mass at the end.
I want to say, first of all, I think you're one of the first people to fully get it. I don't think I have. I like the way that you just described everything. I'm like, wow, that's my movie. And the fact that you were able to recite that back to me, it's like, oh my God, I don't have to explain it. Like, I don't have to, like, and that's literally it. I wrote, this is a comedy, and I like, you know, had really fun with like the jokes and all that, but like the true essence of this movie, and I think it's because, that's how I was raised. I was, you know, and I think it's because we're Caribbean. You know, I'm Haitian, born and raised and Caribbean. And like you, every Sunday, sat in, you know, in front of my mom, got my hair done. And my mom was a hairstylist. And I think this is across all the diaspora, the Black diaspora, where it's like, we're raised and we're taught, especially as Black women, especially as little Black girls, that you do not step out that door unless you are put together. And that's because society, unfortunately, they judge you before you even open your mouth, right? Like they see you and they have made all the assumptions and have all those narratives in their head about who you are. And so as Black girls turning into Black women, we are raised that our appearance is the first line of defense. It is our first tools that we have to control the narrative about us, because unfortunately in this world as Black women, we are, people already have an idea of who we are just simply because we're Black women. We're already, people, we walk through the door, people are already are like angry, you know, sassy, and all these tropes that we've heard time and time again. And in order for us to combat that, we have always been taught since birth. It's like you said, you can, notion, you like, and there's a moment in the movie where it's like when Frankie and Joe have a heart to heart, and Frankie really explains, she's like, you can't even go to the corner store. Like, it is something that's drilled in us as Black women about perfection, about, you know. And I feel like for me as a writer, I'm always trying to, first and foremost, the people I tell stories about are Black women, because I'm a Black woman. I'm going to want to tell stories about us. And I want to find ways to not only like, talk about, specifics, because for me, like everyone who's seen this woman, this movie so far, I don't need to explain it to Black women. They just get it. And they get it just the way that you were able to get it. And like, they get it. I don't have to explain it. And I made this movie for Black women. I write for Black women. My characters are Black women. And so for me, when I was thinking about what my short film would be, I wanted to pick something that I think is a universal thing that like every Black woman gets and understands, because it's something that we've all had to deal with since childhood. And I'm always trying to find ways to like, you know, these tropes that we also kind of adhere to, with like, we're always trying to like the strong Black woman trope and all this stuff like that. And I think inherently it also does a lot more damage to us, because we're always trying to live up to these expectations that not only we have set for ourselves and our mothers and grandmothers and all that stuff like that. And then like, we can't be fully like, just, we don't have the luxury of like, just being vulnerable. And like, we don't have the luxuries of just like, failing and figuring life out. Like, you know, like so many times young Black girls are just immediately thought to be just strong and have their shit together from the moment they turn 12, right? It's like, you know, it's like we don't have that luxury of like girlhood and, you know, messing up and figuring things out without like the entire world just like already pegging us. And so I was just really trying to figure out like, what's a way to tell this in like a fun way, comedic way. And I was just like, well, hair is something that like is something that like all Black girls kind of can understand. Mm-hmm. And so I was just thinking about that, and I was like, maybe I'd do a hair story. And then I watched the episode of Atlanta, the barbershop episode. Second season, I believe. And it was Paperboy. He just wanted a haircut. And it was just, it turned into a crazy day. And I was just like, and then one of my favorite movies is Friday, and it just takes place all in one day. And then with those two combined, and then one of my favorite movies ever is Baps, because I think it's with Halle Berry. And it's one of my favorite movies ever. And it's one of the movies when I watched when I was a kid, where I was just like, this is like one of the first times I got to just see Black girl joy on screen and just be so authentically Black, from like their hair, their nails, the way they dress. It was so Black. It was like, and they didn't change, you know, like, and I was like, those are Black girls I know and I grew up with. And so with those three combined, I was just like, I wanted to kind of write a response to the barbershop episode, because I was like, yeah, it's a, you know, Black man trying to just get his hair braided, and his hair cut. And I was like, what if I did a movie or something if it was a Black girl trying to get her hair braided, and like the same vein. And so it just kind of organically came about, where like, I was like, yeah, I think this will be my first short, because it also, I feel like every black woman I know has a story about like a braiding hairstylist story, nightmare story, and it's universal. And so yeah, so that's how it all came to be, like, and it just naturally, I just wrote the script. And I wasn't even gonna make that actually as my first movie. There was another movie I wanted to make as my first movie, but then everybody who read Unbraided was like, this should be your first short. This should be your first short. And so that's, yeah.
And it makes sense to make a story about characters and a situation that you're familiar with. But then again, as because you know it so well, you understand it inherently, but also it gives you a chance to you like you name the three projects, not pay homage to those, but it's something was as you were speaking kind of occurred to me, and it occurred to me when I was watching the film too, is that for us, finding the right hairstylist is a journey. You know, same as becoming a filmmaker is a journey. You had to find the right pocket to fit you. You know, you worked on different projects, and it took you time to realize, oh wait, this is what I really want to do. And you had someone affirm it and say, but this is what you should have always been doing. And it kind of works the same in the film because you have Frankie's best friend. Let me pull it up because my phone turned off. Her best friend Jo, played by Damia Gurley. She's kind of like, in a way, like how the director affirmed being a director for you. Like, she's the one affirming for Frankie, you're fine as you are. You know, you don't have to conform to everything that your parents want you to do, but she's there to help her on the journey and the guide. Because the thing about that people who are not in our culture don't understand, you need the right person to touch your hair. Like, we are so very specific about our hair, we're so very specific about the energy that people bring around. It's like you kind of poke fun at it in the film a little bit with the cat with the hairdresser who's like, oh, I only deal with water and air signs. And it's hilarious because she's like, I don't deal with, like, she like, take your fire and your earth sign at your energy and like be gone, right? But that's a very personal thing for us. Like, you're very specific about who we let touch our hair. And again, something my mom instilled in me from very young. Like, my sister and we went to a very specific hairdresser when we were young, to do our hair. Only our neighbor Marlene would be the only person to color our hair when we were young.
It's
And then
a sensitive, it's a
it's very
sensitive,
sensitive. Like, you like I
it
I'm
is her
still very
crown. It's
sensitive about who I
vulnerable.
let around touch my hair, around my neck, and that kind of stuff. Because I'm like, it's a because you're in a very vulnerable position, right? You're like,
Exactly.
if someone's
And
touching
it's
your skin,
ours.
it's
It's ours
ours.
when
And like
we're young.
we should have care about who touches our hair, like who's styling our hair, who's controlling our image, you know, because
Exactly.
again, you put it in the film, like the hairdresser Denise that they eventually end up with, she styles someone's hair intentionally bad, and like it, and when you watch it, you realize why. But then she, because she cares about what Frank, even though she and Frankie had a little bit of animosity, being petty with each other, she still takes the time and the care to style Frankie's hair perfectly because she understands what Frank, where Frankie's coming from. She understands why. Being careful with her in and intention of the way she styles her hair, and it's the way you shot it too. Like, you show like that care and that intention in the cinematography and the lighting and the position of the camera. And it's just like we need to be careful about who we let not only in our space, but we let around our heads, our hair, around our energy. And like as you're saying, like that's what it's about, the journey. That's a part of the journey, finding the right person to do our hair. You know, you're not gonna just let some random person just like touch your hair. Like, even for my barber that I go to when I need to go to a barber, I had to make sure that I was comfortable with him to let him like touch, like go around my head with like the razor or whatever, because I'm just
It's
like, you
a
know.
sensitive, and thank you for catching that bit with the hair part, because I really wanted to shoot that scene like as it's a love letter, because it is such a beautiful rich, ritual that we do as black women when we get our hair done and get braided. And so I really wanted to take some time and moment to show that. Like, I didn't want to rush through that in the movie, because to me, like, it's so spiritual when we get our hair done, and when we that whole process, like, it's so beautiful to me. So I wanted to shine a little light on it, and like the lighting and how we shot that. But also, it's like, like finding a barber. Like, I have so many friends who, have cut off their hair, who have low boys and all that, and they still go through the same thing of like, because I think people are like, oh, well, this wouldn't resonate. No, it's like, I have friends who are, who have barbers, and it's like, and also men, right? Like the barbershop episode on Atlanta, it's like finding, because one of the funny thing about that episode that I really loved is like, Paperboy went through hell and back this day with his Barbara, barber, and he was, you know, he's like, I'm done, man. He's going to go to the other, you know, so at the end of that episode, he goes to
the trails to them. And they're like, how dare you?
Yeah, he goes to the other barber. And then when he's waiting for that other barber, he sees his old barber and he's like, damn. And then he goes back to his old barber because he's like, that man knows me and he knows my hair and I trust him despite the crazy day that we just had. He ends up going back to him because it is it's a very strong, powerful relationship, whether or not it's your hair braider, hairstylist, or, you know, men, black women. I feel like it's
female tech. Mm.
Yeah, it's a special relationship you have. And so I was like, it's like, even if you're like sitting in a chair for 4 hours getting braids or getting sew-ins or you're getting a line up or whatever, I think it's a special relationship that's in our community. It's so specific to our community too. And like, I hear men talk about their barbers, I hear women talk about their barbers, it's like it's the same thing. And I feel like you're letting somebody into your personal space. Mm-hmm. You gotta, and it's like, not only that, it's like you're sitting in somebody's chair, you don't like, you want to make sure, like, because I've been to some hairstylists where it's just like, they'll say something like way out of pocket, like politically, you know, religiously, all that stuff. And you're just like, I do not want to sit in this chair with this person who has these views or is crazy like this and who has this, like, this thought process, because like, that's your energy, that's your space. And so, I really wanted to like kind of poke fun at that. Like, but also it is important. Like, so it was like a roundabout way.
I think you showed them both the absurdity sometimes of the selection process, but also the seriousness of the process at the same time, you know, because you do meet some very funny characters throughout life. Like, people are hilarious and people do some odd and strange thing. And you're just like, what is happening? And you go dive in into some places like, yeah, the energy for this is off. Which again, like, mm-hmm. the hairdressers along with like the energy goddess, she was like the same, and she's like, your energy is off. And she kind of reminded me like people on Twitter talking about star signs. And I'm like, I understand nothing about astrology in that particular I don't get it. I have no idea what my signs are. I think I'm a water sign or moon sign, because I'm a Virgo. I'm a Virgo, and that's all I know. I know we're going to wrap it soon, but something else I really want you to talk about, and I think it's important for people to really get from the perspective of an independent filmmaker, is the filming process and the casting process. So talk about finding Damya and Aaliyah for these roles, because they're two very different personalities. You know, Frankie and Joe, very different personality. Frankie, like, we get this, like, we know what her background is. Like, I get the sense she's from an affluent family in the South. And, like, they are, like, the stush family, you know, we call it the bougie family. And they're, like, on ears, you know, like, they go to, mm-hmm. like, send you to, like, cotillions.
Yeah.
And balls and that kind of stuff. Where Joe's the complete opposite. And you need two actresses who not only embody this, but they have to sell the characters to us. Mm-hmm. Like, they're believable to me, because I know women who are just like these characters. I think I'm a bit of both of them. I think I'm a bit of both of these characters combined. But talk about casting them and like the process for you, because you're an independent filmmaker. It's a small, very small budget. And so you don't have like an agency that you can go to that has like hundreds of actors to pull from. So what was that process like for you?
I would say for me, because we're a short film and we were self-funded. We did a campaign through Indiegogo. And I think for any independent filmmaker, first thing I learned is getting great producers who know the things that you're maybe not well-versed in, you know? So I had three amazing producers on this project, and each of them had like super strong skill sets, you know, that they were really good at. And very strong, all women of color, also writers, directors themselves. And they came on board this project because they believed in the vision and they believed in my, believed in me and what I wanted to do. And they were able to like get us to the finish line. But, you know, in our first initial meetings that we had, on top of like launching our Indiegogo, how much realistically we wanted to raise, our first initial conversation was about, of course, casting, because like you said, Joe and Frankie, it's essential that the people that we cast in those parts were the chemistry. Like, this movie lives and dies on this friendship and this relationship. And that's my favorite part of the movie, is Joe and Frankie's friendship.
A whole series, our full feature length film, film with them, because they're so funny.
Exactly.
My girl talking about a samurai collection. I want to know more about this samurai sword collection. Like, what?
Because I don't know. There's this weird, I feel like I, like me, my sister, like there's so many Black women I'm friends with who are like, we're such nerds and we're like obsessed with samurais. And like, and so, and there was like one point in my life, I wanted like a bunch of samurais. And like, I'm like always trying to like once again, like when I write Black women, I'm like writing from personal experiences, but I also like, I feel like it's one of my like purpose to like show Black women friendship, show like authentic Black women relationships, but also show like different sides of Black women. And I know so many Black women who are just like obsessed with samurais, and I'm one of them. Like, and so I just thought it was a funny bit to put in there. It's just like, what would someone like Joe want to spend her day? And I was like, yeah, she's going to go want to get a samurai collection. Cause why? Cause I would want that too. So, so once again, like this movie lives and dies on Frankie and Joe, because this one, you know, besides being a movie about hair, this movie is about Black women friendship. It's about Black women sisterhood and friendship, and having someone like, you know, Frankie having someone like Joe be your ride or die and be your person who will help you get through this, but also like hold you and also tell you, like you were saying earlier about like, hey, like, you know, it's okay being yourself. Like, we all need that person. We all need a Joe. They are complete opposites, like you said. And thank you. And once again, you completely got what I was putting out there, and I don't have to explain. Like, Frankie is from this type of family where it's like perfection, and you know, she's affluent, and Jack and Jill cotillion, like that's that Black family. And you have Joe, and so Frankie needs somebody like that. She needs somebody in her life like Joe, who is completely opposite of her, because she would never get out of her own head in her own way. And so we really knew that like our two leads needed to like be that, we had to get it right. Like, we, you know, we didn't have a movie if we didn't get that casting right. And like I said, getting producers, if you're an independent filmmaker, really get strong producers who are really good at what they do, and each person have their skill set. You know, my one producer's budget's their thing. They were amazing at the money, which also just left me as a writer and director to not have to worry about that stuff. I can focus on my craft. I don't have to worry about money. And I had one producer who's great at casting. And she was really good at casting. She had a lot of relationship with casting directors and actors. And I remember we had one producer who had came on initially, but had to drop because of her bandwidth. First thing she said to us was like, we should cast some actors who have a little bit of credits, because if you're an independent short film person, or independent, you're like making your first thing, it goes a long way to have somebody not super green. Yeah. So, you know, we had Monique Coleman, we had Sasha Comprere, we had Garfrey, like people who had things. So we were like, we had to balance that out. And so my producer, Sydney Butler, she actually was the one who found our two actresses. She, Sydney worked on Black Lady Sketch Show, and mm-hmm. Demaya, who blew up on TikTok and also had just did that last season of, that's my dog, Jack, who did the last season of, Black Lady Sketch Show. She was like, I think Demaya would be really good as Joe. And then, yeah, we reached out to her reps. We did the whole app. She actually sent in an audition tape for both Frankie and Joe. And she did great in both, but she was Joe. Yeah. And then Aaliyah, we actually found through Sydney as well. Aaliyah is went to NYU and with Sydney. And she's a great up-and-coming young actress. She had just finished doing a stint on Grown-ish. And we had her send in the tape. And it was just like, after my first watch, I was like, that's Frankie. And like you, Frankie's a mix of both me. And Frankie and Joe's a mix of both me, like both my personalities. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and so it was immediate from their audition tapes that it was them. And then, of course, the chemistry, we were like, got to make sure we get the chemistry right. And I don't know, I took them to lunch and they just immediately hit it off. And we had a really long lunch. And then I just like made sure that they stayed in contact before we started filming. And then they got to know each other and then like they actually built a friendship. And then we did rehearsals, lots of rehearsals, and we talked to each other as the three of us, but then I talked individually to both of them. And I just made sure that they like hung out and got to know each other. So then by the time we started shooting, it was like, oh yeah, you guys are friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's how that all came about, was getting Aaliyah and Demaya. They were amazing. They are Joe and Frankie.
They were great. Like they're like, because like the thing with them with these two characters, because again, like with one of the things that I love about short films is that you get a whole range of emotions from your characters and a whole story arc and all of these character and story developments within a very short space of time. And with them, you get like the introduction as roommates who are opposites in personality and behavior, but then we also get to see the things that bring them close together, like, you know, like talking about movies and like the scene where they're on the sofa on the couch where they're like, you see them being physically close as friends and being comfortable, but then going on this crazy adventure. Like Frankie listens to Joe, she lets Joe take her to all of these weird people to potentially do her cure. And then they have a small argument. It's a very short, small argument. It's not like a big thing, but it also gives you the background for both of them, but also lets you see that Joe in particular doesn't accept nonsense from anyone, including mm-hmm. Frankie. You know, she mm-hmm. puts Frankie in her place very quickly. She says, I'm the one whose hair helping you go all over the place for a hairdresser when really and truly I don't have to. But she said, I'm doing it because I care for you and I want you to be happy and I want you to feel comfortable. But also, like, don't push it, you know?
Yeah.
And like that. So we get this whole full sense of who these characters are. And that works because the cast has to work. And something I always say is that sometimes when you're watching a film or a show or whatever, you can tell when the cast does not get along behind the scenes. No matter how good a performer they are, something just always comes through. And, like, this one, like, you could feel the comfort for them on screen. Like, you know, it felt natural. It didn't feel like mm-hmm. they just... Like there was no rehearsing. They're just like coming on screen. Like, no, you get the sense that there is a relationship and a friendship there. So I think like you and the casting there and the producers did a really good job finding them, and they did a really good job building that rapport off screen to make sure it worked on screen.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm really proud about that. Yeah, I really trusted my gut on those audition tapes. I think because I used to act. Prior to writing and directing, I think it doesn't really take me too long to see, you know, I feel like I can sense within the first like 5 minutes of an audition tape. And yeah, those girls killed it. And it was so natural. When we first met up the first time for lunch and they met and I just kind of sat back and I was like, oh yeah, this is going to work. And so I'm glad that, yeah.
Yeah, that worked. And I know you have to go on a bug. And thank you so much for joining me, Aunt Carol. Like,
yeah, thank you. This has been so much fun. And I'm, yeah, like, I'm excited to talk about a movie. And I'm glad that, like, and I'm particularly always excited to talk to about Black women, because I feel like I don't need to explain and you guys just mm-hmm. get it. And it's like the way that you were able to, like, say back to me what the movie was. I was like, yeah, that's it. And that's like, and I love that because it's like, I made the movie for us. Like, this is ours. And every Black woman has been like, yep, I got it. I understand. I know exactly what you were doing. And I'm like, and that's all that matters to
me. Yeah, no, it was great to talk to you. We're going to have to do another. I want us to do another special podcast talking more about the film industry in Hollywood, because I didn't mention at the beginning, but you were a strike captain during the WGA mm-hmm. strikes. And like, that has been such a shift in the industry. And like, there's so much that has affected people like you, like independent filmmakers and writers. And like Hollywood, this is something that I've said before on like Twitter or whatever, but I see there's a change happening in Hollywood. Yeah. And I do want to talk to more people to get more, not only perspective of people in the industry from your perspective, mm-hmm. but I want people to understand exactly what's happening, because, and also about the process of filmmaking, because one of the first, I think one of the first conversations we had was where someone had talked about, why don't you just get an iPhone and shoot a camera, make a film? And you were like, no, it takes more than that. You know, like you were talking about getting licenses and taxes and
budget. Which is what we did on here, because, you know, for me, when I approached Unbraided and I was approaching this as like, you know, this is going to be my first like official, it's like I've done, you know, things I won't show, like, you know, little shitty like web shows and shorts and stuff like that, like when I was in college and my 20s when I first moved out here. And I just don't. And so when I was like, you know, this is for real, like I'm going to be really serious about directing, I knew that I needed it to visually look, you know, my amazing DP, Sade India, she's an amazing Black woman DP, coming, like, thank God I have her now, because probably in like 2 years, she'd be too big for me. She's one of the, like, she's such an amazing, she has such a great eye, like the colors, all that stuff that we came up with. I knew that, like, I needed to, as an independent Black woman filmmaker who's just starting out, I don't have the luxury of, like, failing up. Like, that's just not afforded to us. That, like, I knew I needed to do this right. And I had to get a great team. I started with my amazing producers. Like, you know, 98% of our entire production is women and women of color, which is another reason why I think I gravitated towards directing, because I can control who I hire and my heads of departments and the people I work with. And so one of my main goals was like, we're hiring as many Black women as we possibly can in all of these positions of power. And we're also hiring as many women, women of color, non-binary people. Like, you know, I think in our entire production, we had like 4 men, like, you know, like we had like 4 guys in our entire production. It's so funny. Like, you walked on this set and it was like, whoa, I've had like, everybody came up to me and was like, I've never worked on a set that was majority all women in every position of power. And so I needed the best of the best. You know, our entire camera crew was Black women, our entire, you know, costume, hair, makeup, the PAs, like, you know, even some of the grips, like everybody was women. And yeah, and like I have 1 man in the cast, and then my rest of my crew is like 4 guys. Yeah. Because I knew that I needed the best of the best, but I also needed to make a statement by being like, if I can do this on my little short film,
right?
You could do this on your $200 million project. It's not difficult. Mm-hmm. But I also knew that, like, I needed to come out the gate swinging. You know, I needed to come out the gate being like, I can do this and on practically no money, no budget, and we can do it on this type of equipment with such a good crew. Because once again, I, unfortunately, the realities of the world and the realities of the industry that we're in, Black women aren't afforded second, third chances. And you don't get to not make a, you know, you don't get, if I don't make a good first short film, I'm not going to get to make a good second short film, and I'm not going to get to make my feature film. And I know this, I'm not like, I'm not naive to the world that we are in. And I don't get the, I'm not a Nepo baby. I don't have a dad who's a former, you know, like, I don't come from money. So I have to do this right. And so when people are like, yeah, just shoot it on your iPhone, it's like, okay, that's not how this works. Also, a lot of the times when people like shoot on the iPhone, they always neglect the fact that that person had like a full other rigging system and sound and lighting and da 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 da. It's just like, they never tell you the full story. Right. It's like, yeah, I shot this on my iPhone. Like, yeah, but also the budget was this, and they had also, you know, $1 million of lighting and all this other stuff and sound, because those also make the movie. Like, if you're moody, you can't hear the movie, you can't see the movie, you didn't make a movie, right? So that's, yeah, so I know that was like our first initial conversation was just like, because when I tweeted that, because I was just like, that's not how this works. Like, I think it's so easy for people to tell up and coming, struggling directors of colors, just like, shoot it on your phone, but they always, always neglect to mention that they have money or that they have like so many other things. And I was just like, that advice never really applies to us. And so it's bad advice to directors of color.
Exactly, for sure. And they know it too. They just don't want to pretend. Just put on a
Yeah.
facade. But yeah, but no, thank you so much for joining me today. And I definitely will have you back because I just had an idea for another podcast episode. But I digress. But thank you so much for
Of
joining me
course.
today, Caroline. And like have an amazing day. And like I hope like the other festivals that you show at, like you have successful screenings and everyone receives the film the way you want it to be received and the way it should be received. And like congrats to the cast as well and the crew.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for watching it and getting it and understanding. We're really proud of it. We're really excited for the rest of the world to see it. And it's my baby, and I'm really proud that this is we got to do it.
You should be like you did a great job, and like it's not easy as making a like a great film out straight out the gate, but you did it, and you did it yourself.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. So everyone, that was another episode of Caroline Talks, and today I was joined by independent filmmaker Caroline Bernard to talk about her debut short film, Unbraided, which had its premiere at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, and it will be showing at some other film festivals going forward. I'll put information for that in the description box. It was great to talk to Caroline about this film, about her process as a filmmaker, and like how the reason she became a filmmaker, which is like to have control of her narrative, of the stories that she's written, that of the stories that she writes and creates, and the characters that she loves and develops. And that makes so much sense to me because as a writer, you only have limited control of the story. And once it leaves your hands and it goes into development, that's it. Right? That's kind of how Hollywood works. But it was great to talk to her about that and about the film of Unbraided being about control and loss of control and regaining that control. And using here as a narrative device for that, I thought was brilliant. And I love that as a metaphor. And also talking about culture and sisterhood and relationships, you know, like there's so much in this film. And it's just about 12, 13 minutes long, but there's a lot I love in it. And I love the visual color of it, I love the color palette. It has like almost kind of made me think of like a Miami Vice theme, which is like kind of like pinks and greens and blues and reds. And the characters of Joe and Frankie wear those colors really well. And there's like a pajama set that Frankie wears that I kind of want for myself. I'm gonna have to ask Caroline where she got that from, but I really loved it. I really enjoyed the film. So again, thank you, Caroline, for joining me. You'll of course find the video version of this podcast episode on my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/@signcaroline_hines. Go to my R3 page to find all of my published requests, interviews, written interviews, other episodes of the podcast and YouTube links there as well. All of my op-eds, all of my film analysis and what have you. Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Carrie Sanishov. That's Carrie Sanishov, where I usually in my pinned tweets so you can find my latest coverage there. And for this week, while we were recording this, I've been covering the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin. I'm doing it virtually from Toronto, but you'll find my interviews for that as well as the Sundance Film Festival held in January and other film festival coverage beyond, as well as the K Crush, the coverage I've been doing for K Crush American Magazine, which is a digital magazine on Asian stories and narratives by Asian creators. So you can go to kcrush.com, and if you go into interview section, and you'll see the work that I did there, like during the Busan International Film Festival and other festivals that I covered last year, as well as Sundance. So until the next episode of Caroline Talks, everyone, stay safe. Bye.